Coach Mo.
Hey, it's Coach Mo.
Hey, it's Coach Mo.
Knowing what you want to accomplish professionally is just the beginning. I'm Coach Mo, and this podcast is for young professionals and emerging leaders who want to lead, achieve, and succeed at work. You've got executive ambitions and the drive to get there. Join me for perspective, insights, and thought-provoking questions that only you can answer. Today's episode starts now.
Tuesdays with Coach Mo.
I was re-watching one of my favorite voices on the topic of maximizing your success, and that's Carla Harris, Vice Chairman and Managing Director at Morgan Stanley. If you haven't already checked out one of her many YouTube videos, definitely worth making the time. And in re-watching this video, I was reminded that in order to maximize your success in your current seat, to secure your future seat in an executive role, you have to be motivated and inspired such that you're intentional about building two forms of your currency that Carla talks about. And those two forms of currency are your performance currency and relationship currency. Now, if you're a regular listener to the Tuesdays with Coach Mo podcast, I imagine that you're already achieving success at generating your performance currency. Like my many coaching clients over the years, you're smart, you're driven, and you're quite capable of achieving that which you set your mind to. However, when self-diagnosing your proficiency in the area of relationship currency, you may come to discover that you're a bit more challenged in your efforts toward maximizing your success. Hello and welcome everyone to the Tuesdays with Coach Mo podcast. I'm your host, Executive Coach Monique Betty, connecting with you from sunny South Florida. Now, today's topic of time management is actually mission critical for those of you who want to ascend the executive ranks, particularly to the C-suite. You see, those positions are not just handed over to the person with the best performance. They're often earned by the people who are intentional about becoming a leader and making investments in their performance and relationship currency. And what I want for you is to have a system in place so that you're making the time for building your relationship currency while delivering on that high performance level that I know you're already doing. It truly is mission critical to make the time to get to know others in your organization while at the same time providing others with the opportunity to get to know you. So how does that benefit you? Well, in addition for you really understanding the values of your organization, you're also nurturing that trust while building rapport. And you see, the ROI in your relationship currency is gonna pay dividends when others are speaking up for you when you're not in the room. As Carla Harris says, important decisions are made about you when you're not in the room. And that includes decisions related to compensation, promotion, and possibly new assignments. And if you think you can't control how people are thinking about you, well, think again. Carla actually breaks down her secret sauce on how to actually train people to think about you when you're not in the room. In fact, be certain to catch the show notes for today's podcast at TuesdaysWithCoachMo.com, and I'll include a link to Carla Harris's video on maximizing your success. Now, let's pivot to today's topic on time management with my guest, Frances Wade, productivity expert and author of Perfect Time-Based Management, How to Rescue Your Peace of Mind as Time Demands Increase. Now, to frequent listeners of the Tuesdays with Coach Mo podcast, that name may be familiar to you, as you may recall that earlier this season, I spoke with Francis on the topic of type A personalities. He truly is genius in this area of maximizing your productivity in the workplace. In addition to being president of Framework Consulting, he's also the founder of Schedule U at Two Time Labs. It's a training company that focuses on building the skills of highly motivated, busy people to actually use their calendars in innovative and empowering ways. Now, the mission of his organization is to change the way people's relationships with time via their calendars so that it becomes a powerful resource that allows them to accomplish their dreams. Now, as we're about to step into the conversation I'm having with Francis, I want to share an excerpt first from his book, Perfect Time-Based Productivity. And what really stood out for me was at the start of chapter 2, titled, Who Do You Think You Are? And here he says, think about the best improvement you ever made to the way you manage time demands. Got an example? He then goes on to say that many people stumble over this question. Even though managing and executing activities in time is an activity that we all do as functioning adults. Now, the reason we stumble is that we don't know who we are in the realm of time-based productivity. We really don't pay much attention to how the job gets done. Instead, our concern is primarily on our next result and what we need to do to close the gap. So raise your hand if this passage actually represents you. So let's all err on the side of being truth tellers in terms of what's really going on for us. And listen in on this conversation as Francis talks about the value, kind of the how-to for time management, because you only have 24 hours in a day. And if you want to leverage your currency, as Carla Harris has pointed out, it really is about leveraging that performance as well as that relationship. So maximize your 24 hours in order to build currency on both fronts. Enjoy the conversation. So, what makes time management really mission critical for today's high achieving young professional?
But particularly for the high achievers, they like to say yes to their aspirations. So, there's nothing more frustrating to a high achiever or even to anyone with aspirations, serious aspirations, to have to say no. They'd rather say yes and then say to themselves, I'll figure it out later or I'll find a way. And that over-optimism leads them to overcommit, but it leads them to, even before they overcommit, to take 23.5 to 23.9. They take it right up to the edge. So as they look at a week of 168 hours, they'll happily commit so many hours that they take out time for sleep, family, meals, exercise. Those are the typical ones that get recovery, rest. Those are the ones that typically get dropped out as commitments start to increase. You know, you've heard the saying, if you want to get something done, give it to somebody who's busy.
Yes.
So that person could be on a team and they get right up to the 168th hour while everybody else is cruising around at 100 with lots of discretionary time and they're having a good time and they're, but give it to Monique because Monique will get it done.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So the boss, you know, the boss develops a habit and eventually your reputation gets out and people start to come to you and they start to ask you to do different things. And you being a good soldier, no is not the first thing that comes to mind when you have taken a job. It's yes. So inevitably you start to commit to more than you can actually handle. And partly it's a function of poor estimation. Mm-hmm. And for anyone who is a good performer, estimation will always be a challenge and a problem. Problem for everybody, but for good performers, it's more of a problem because it means that for the 6 projects that you're on, if you're underestimating how long each one takes, you're going to be committing to more than 168 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And something's got to give.
What are some of those common signs that indicate, it's now a problem?
Yeah, well, I actually have a list. I live with a list right here on the side of my computer of common symptoms. The most common is a feeling of overwhelm. And it even could turn into a surefire symptom is if you wake up in the middle of the night and all of a sudden your heart is racing, your palms are sweaty, and your eyes are wide open. The reason you've been jolted awake is because some commitment that you have is about to fall through the cracks. So you're about to drop the ball on something and you all of a sudden realize, wait, I didn't put in place, or I already missed it, or I forgot to, or I should have. High achievers and lots of people, right, have that experience. And that's one of the surefire feelings or experiences that something is way off.
Right now, I am working with a couple of high-performing individuals, and one is actually a new mom, right? And her son is about 1 year old, and she is still attempting to function at the level she did even before marriage. And it's really become apparent to her that, well, something has to give. I mean, it's almost as if she is embracing anger and bitterness and mad about the way things are.
Oh.
And she recognizes that it's about this saying yes to everything. And so from a coaching space, it's, well, what does saying yes to you look like?
First, right. That's a big switch that people like her have to make. It happens in many, many people's lives. There's this moment when you either have a baby or you get married or you take a promotion or you join a task force at work, or you add on a commitment in your community or your church, whatever it might be. All of a sudden, there's a spike in your commitments and you need to recover from the spike. And there's new skills that you need, new tools and skills you need to implement just to make it through. And she, the spike was the baby, and she's probably operating with the same practices that she had before.
Yes.
And she now needs to pivot. And she now needs to, part of the pivot for her is to probably, like you said, say yes to herself first and set up a schedule for herself that excludes everyone else and every other commitment. So it has sleep time, it has food time, it has exercise time, it has all of the things that you need to be a basic functioning human being. So that'll look like a promise to herself. It's called New Fiori calls it an unscheduled, because it comes from the inside as opposed from the outside. And once you've done that, that's your template for the week. Then you consider externals such as family members. Okay, well, this person needs this block of time. This person needs that. A job needs this. This project needs that. But you come from a different place. You come from the inside out as opposed to the outside in.
Outside in, right. Because that was one of the things I would say I discovered. I really had never given much thought to life with a spouse, life with a baby. It was all corporate, go, go, go. You know, you're traveling, you're getting things done. You have certainly set expectations with all of those around you that you're the get it done person. And here comes spouse, here comes baby. You're still trying to keep it all going. And there is this new thing I have to admit I discovered. It's called sleep deprivation. That is so not pretty. Sleep deprivation is a thing. Because I recognize, like, sometimes things would just come out of my mouth. I was just in such a way, right? And it was like almost on attack mode to my poor husband, you know, or people around me, as if, wait, did I just say that? And it's like, because you just don't have as clear control over your thoughts and your words when you're sleep deprived. And
like being intoxicated, right?
Oh my goodness, yes. So terrible, terrible experience. That I, in fact, learned from and recognized the only way to make a change was it had to come from within me and how I was going to bring other people along. But thinking about how these habits get formed, in particular for high achievers, what I've witnessed is they get into the workplace. Yes, they start making the climb. They have their first managerial role, and they're now responsible for the work of others and leading the way. And they find not everyone's like them. Not everyone has that need for speed, that need for perfection, that need for getting it all done. And that just really is upsetting. And so then you come to blame, you know, what's wrong with those people? And so if we could just kind of step back, and if you can invite us into that kind of process of how are time management habits formed? Because I think understanding how things begin helps to then do something about them when it's time to detour.
Right. Well, they have their origin in our teenage years, but mostly they start from adolescence when we start to make commitments to ourselves, which in other words means we start to make time commitments. Mm-hmm. But the habits start being formed in our teens for the most part. So by the time you get married, you've already gotten these habits in place. By the time you join the workforce, you already have a pattern that you're following. Now, if you're a manager, you may not even know your pattern, and you may not realize that they have their pattern. Mm. Now, while there's commonality to all of our patterns, each of us apply them in very different ways. It's almost like we all can walk, but we all look very different when we're walking. Mm-hmm. So we apply them very differently. So a manager needs to appreciate that the person in front of them or the person who works for them may have patterns that are less effective than the manager's. Mm. But that doesn't tell you very much. That's like saying both of us are sprinters and you're faster than I am. That doesn't mean I should copy you. Mm-hmm. It just means that what's working for you is what's working for you. And I need to find what works for me. Mm-hmm. So the manager needs to up his or her own level of awareness and understanding so that they can help the person see for themselves how to make improvements that would make sense in their world. Mm-hmm. No, that's much, much harder than telling them, oh, you just need to buy, you need to use a calendar on your phone, mm-hmm. or you need to buy this app that that I use, or you need to, because those kind of prescriptions, they've never worked and they don't work in this particular instance. Yeah, and it really is about empowering the person to be a great diagnostician. Now, if you empower someone to be a great diagnostician, that's a skill they'll have for their entire life. Mm-hmm. Whether they're in their first job, mm-hmm. they're 22 years old and they have just started and they're just learning the habits of the workplace. Mm-hmm. At that point, they're going to have to make many, many changes throughout their career that rely on this diagnostic capability. So the best gift you can give someone is not being a role model in terms of time management, although that's somewhat better than nothing, uh-huh. better that you be good than bad, better than worse. Mm-hmm. It's not to tell them to go read a book. It's not tell them to pick up an app. It's not tell them to do any specific thing. It's to have them be able to sit down and understand where their own behaviors are getting them into trouble, diagnose them, change them so that they can implement changes and therefore make a switch. And that's true for the manager also. Mm-hmm. But the manager would have to know that for themselves, I guess.
Well, and that was going to be my next question. That's exactly, that's where I was going to go. So two things come up for me as I hear you kind of unpack that, Francis. And the first is, ooh, that sounds like that takes time. It takes time to be more proficient at managing time, right? Because it's easy. Hey, I use this app. It works for me. Do this. So from a manager, a first-time manager in particular's experience, you think that, hey, I'm going to just tell them, why aren't they listening to what I'm telling them to do? Well, like you said, they don't walk like you. They walk, but they don't walk like you. And so it's about that other person wanting to do that for themselves and discovering their patterns and things that are getting in the way for optimizing their performance in the workplace. And I imagine that takes time. So that's kind of the first part of my question, is speaking more about kind of that process of supporting someone else and unearthing that pattern. And the second does become with, how do you manage up when you have a boss or senior leaders, you know, who don't have healthy time management practices?
Well, that's a huge, huge problem.
And I have a thought on that, though.
Yeah, sometimes you'll have to compensate for them. Mm-hmm. So if you've been in a meeting with someone who claims to, you know, who believes that they're capable and, you know, they're starting to give out action items and the person is going, yep. And you're kind of looking to see, are they typing it in somewhere? Are they writing anything down? And nothing is going down. And somewhere around the fifth action item, you start to get nervous. No, you could be the boss or the employee, but in a situation like that, you'd better start writing stuff down because it's that person is probably not going to remember. And your intuition is probably correct. Mm-hmm. So there's compensating for what they're not doing, mm-hmm. and capturing these commitments that require time is a core behavior that some are really, really good at and some are really, really bad at. I've seen CEOs who are really bad at it, mm-hmm. but there's no one holding them to account and they get by in other areas and they're really smart. And
you surround yourself with the right people who fill those gaps.
and they compensate for you.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So it's like, I'm not saying it's fair. I'm saying it's right.
Oh, there's nothing fair in the workplace.
You got to get to that level of skill where you can see problems happening right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Other people creating problems. And if you can see that, then when it comes to time management, you can compensate to some degree for them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ultimately, if you can have a conversation with the person to have him or her look and at their own system and be that diagnostician I talked about before,
mm-hmm.
power to you. Great if you can. Not easy to do because we're not talking about a simple skill here. The skill of quote unquote, managing your time
mm-hmm.
is complex.
Mm-hmm.
It's not taught in any standard way. It's self-taught. And by the time we get into adulthood, we're at all kinds of levels of behavior. And diagnostic ability is something that's just not taught.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. So let's take that forward. Where do you learn? Now, I'm going out on a limb and saying you're prompted to want to learn, to have to learn because something just was broken. Something fell apart and your lack of time management proficiency contributed significantly to that thing happening. You know, some people may just feel like, oops, you know, do better next time. But for those who are committed to that process of wanting to do something different, where do you start? Where do you start?
To be honest, this is what I've been working on for the last decade or more than a decade.
That's why you're here.
let me share with you the state of the art at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rapid diagnostic that I've created. It's at rapidassessment.mytimedesign.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it offers in 20 minutes the ability to learn how to diagnose your 13 core practices, 13 that we all have. But from this diagnosis, you're able to understand what you should be improving first, second, third, fourth, and fifth. And we actually take you through steps to help you to diagnose your own profile. So it's not trivial. Mm-hmm. It's not as easy as just download an app. Downloading an app is much easier.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't work.
Right. Right. Do you want something that works?
You want something that works. You've got to take if you don't want to take a training like that, my book, Perfect Time-Based Productivity, is another place that you can find diagnostic tools. That's much longer than 20 minutes, unfortunately, because I did a heck of a lot of academic research to figure out how do you come to this level of personal awareness. You know, it's if you're familiar with, maybe going with another limb here, but this is really a sports analogy, but for football players, if you're a great football player, you may think you're all that in a bag of chips,
mm-hmm.
but usually there's a coach there who can tell you whether you're good or not. And if you're really good, as you get to the higher levels of the sport, you go through the different levels of personal, the individual diagnosis. And one that caught my attention was the NFL Combine.
Mm-hmm.
So the NFL Combine is, for those who may not know, is a kind of like a camp that you go to. I think it's a week or 2 weeks, and it's for those who hope to be drafted. And after you go to the combine or at the combine, they do a battery of diagnostic tests.
Mm-hmm.
And you come away understanding, your mind is blown by how much you discover about yourself and your ability based mm-hmm. on the feedback that you receive. But it's not about giving you feedback. They want to diagnose how well you will perform at the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to predict, are you going to be a great NFL wide receiver, quarterback?
Mm.
And these tests are done by the NFL. Are shared with all the teams, and the teams look at the tests and they figure it out. In essence, the higher you rise in the sport, the more important diagnostics become. And that's where time management is also. At a very basic level, little tips and tricks do work
mm-hmm.
because they're moving you from a basic level. But above that level, there's no more that you can get from little tips and tricks. You've got to become a great diagnostician.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you could hire someone to diagnose you like a coach,
mm-hmm.
power to you. Mm-hmm. Spend the money if you can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of us, kind of regular people, we really need to be doing our own examination, our own self-evaluation. And that's mm-hmm. where we come up with the improvements.
Just doing that simple task of almost slowing things down to the point where you say, what am I doing in each, I don't know, 10-minute, 15-minute block of the day to discover for yourself?
That kind of level of shock insight is exactly what a good diagnosis provides you, because then it gives you, you're never the same again after that, right?
I don't think I've asked you yet, but what's your motivation for pursuing this field of expertise for yourself?
Failure. Oh. Personal failure. Like many things in life.
Motivator.
Right? Yeah. I had a context shift, like the ones I mentioned, like having a baby, you get promoted. My context shift was to move from Florida to Jamaica. Uh-huh. And when that happened, I went from someone who was, I thought, pretty effective. I taught time management programs before I moved back to Jamaica, moved here to Jamaica. Mm-hmm. And when I moved here, I was unproductive and I was struggling and I couldn't figure out why. So it took 2 years of research to figure out and some wrong turns. Uh-huh. And I tried going back to, what do the gurus say? Maybe they'll tell me what I need to be doing. But none of them have ever been to living in a life in a third world country, in a developing mm-hmm. country. They have no idea what I'm going through. Uh-huh. And I went Googling, how do you manage your time in a war zone? I was desperate for any kind of assistance. And there was nothing. I said, it's not the same. It's not the same. So I started to do this diagnosis for myself seriously for the first time. And I started to get answers, started to change my behavior accordingly. And that led to better use of time. So time management is kind of a misnamed word. You really can't manage time.
Right.
What you manage is your behaviors are your behaviors. And they lead to different time usage. Mm-hmm. And so I had to sort through a whole bunch of stuff to get at the behaviors. And that's what led me to the diagnosis first approach that I really want to be. I want it everywhere in the world because the problems that we are talking about are universal for people, just for people who work. Because I focus on those alone. But if working moms have the same problem, mm-hmm. people who commit to high-performing athletics or sports have that problem, artists, it's a universal problem for people who have aspirations. As long as their commitments are big enough to take them to the edge, then they're going to have a, quote, time management problem. But they need to be diagnosing their behaviors. Same way they diagnose the areas that they're good at. You know, sports mm-hmm. people diagnose their ability to throw the ball, catch the ball. We need to do the same thing in our behaviors that underlie our time management, so setups and systems.
Mm-hmm. And I love what you said, Mr. and Ms. Wrong Turn are powerful teachers. When you take that wrong turn, you kind of hit that bump, hit that wall. Oops. That's a lesson. You know, that's a lesson. Yeah. So as we're drawing to a close for our time together, Francis, share with us a story of someone you've supported or what you've witnessed in terms of someone who has approached that diagnostic process or gained clarity on their patterns and what happened as a result of investing in that process. Or in fact, maybe a possible failure, someone who started and what were those things that got in the way of what prevented them from being successful? So,
sure. I had a fellow from New Zealand, actually, who was working here in Jamaica. He was managing a bunch of people in a manufacturing company. Mm-hmm. And he brought himself and his direct reports, all of his team to the training because they were struggling and he couldn't figure out why. He just knew that things were different in this culture that he was in, but he didn't know why and he couldn't explain to them because there was a lot of things that he was taking for granted coming from New Zealand mm-hmm. that once they were taken away, he couldn't figure out why am I struggling or why are we struggling so much? And I can't take them all back with me to New Zealand and have us work there. So there's something I need to figure out here. Well, he did figure it out. You know, in a couple of years, he went from what we call a white belt to an orange and then a green belt.
Nice.
Which is a very, very high level of attainment in a matter of a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And they were able to take the approach and apply it to them for themselves. Whereas before he was trying to kind of tell them what worked in New Zealand and what was working for him. Now he could coach them and do exactly what you described, which is mm-hmm. what do you think the problem is based on the tools that you have at your disposal? Where do you see your weakness? Let's take a look at your profile. Where do you see the gaps in your profile? Because they know how to written profile diagrams and mm-hmm. they had the whole thing. So that made a world of difference.
Was it them trying to perform there in Jamaica?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So two things stand out for me in that story. One is you mentioned over a 2-year period. So there's time and there's degrees. You mentioned going from like white belt to, you know, the different levels. So I just think that suggests that one should give themselves some grace for the journey. And it's not just a, I need to stop that and start this today. But that is a journey with varying degrees. That give yourself some grace. You're not going to get it completely right. But over time, you will establish what works and is productive for you.
Right. You know, it took you, whatever age you are now, it took you, the age you are now, minus 13 years. Because at about age 13 is when you started to develop habits. Mm-hmm. You've been practicing the habits that you've been using for that long. Mm-hmm. And to unlearn those habits is no small feat. You know, there's research that shows that even after heart attacks, something like 40% of those who have had them don't change their behaviors. You know, we have, even in the face of imminent death, we have a hard time changing behaviors, let alone just for time management purposes. So mm-hmm. even if you have the highest commitments, it takes time to learn these new behaviors. And a couple of years, yeah. And if you're looking to make progress, and even at the end of the couple of years, technology would have changed. You probably would be in a different job. Mm-hmm. Your life situation would have changed. So the volume of your commitments may even be higher. Mm-hmm. So you've even got to go beyond where you get to 2 years and then say, okay, well, what do I need given my life right now?
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, when the, you know, everything kind of came to a stop and it was shelter in place, remember in those early months, and people no longer had that commute, that now all of a sudden they have this kind of newfound time on their hands. And for some, it got really good. Like, oh my gosh, I don't have that drive. I don't have to get dressed, you know, to the degree. I don't have to go through all of that. And I have more time. And some use it wisely. And I think others were probably filling it that time, probably trying to work and keep the wheels spinning, only to really be working themselves into a really bad situation working from home. And not having the approach.
It's what the research says. More hours as a result.
More hours dedicated to work as a result.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unwittingly working longer hours without realizing it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so my motto is there's an off button for a reason. On all of this stuff, all the devices, all everything, there is an off button. So good. Thank you, Francis, so much for your time. What final thoughts do you want to share with our listeners as it relates to this topic around time management?
Become great self-diagnosticians and it'll open up a whole different world of opportunity for you.
And what are some, you know, just thinking along those lines, what are some just quick suggestions for folks? So yes, there's a, you know, online resource that you offer, but what can individuals do starting today for themselves?
You know, we touched on the one behavior that of being in a meeting with someone who doesn't write things down, mm-hmm. doesn't write down their time commitments. Mm-hmm. It's to capture your time commitment. So what? That's an easy, if you've never even thought of the topic before, mm-hmm. capture your time commitments as soon as they enter your consciousness. As soon as your mind says, oh, I got to pick up the bread later. Mm-hmm. Do not allow it to sit in your mind. Mm-hmm. Take it from your mind and capture it in your phone or in a paper pad. Or if you're fortunate enough to have an admin assistant, mm-hmm. have your admin. Everything that you think you should remember for later. The answer is, we were taught we should remember. Well, when it comes to demands on your time and these commitments, the reverse is the opposite is actually too. It's true. Mm-hmm. Do not try to remember any of them. The more you try to remember, the less effective you'll be.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. Well, Francis, thank you so much for your time and for your expertise and for adding such wonderful value to our listeners.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
That was Francis Wade, consultant and author of Perfect Time-Based Productivity. Now, as I mentioned in the intro, Francis is also the founder of Schedule U at Two Time Labs. It's a training company which also offers Time Blocking Summit and a course actually on scheduling. So he often works with individuals, but you will find his book is chock full of content for the individual learner, such as yourself. Now, a few key points that resonated with me from our conversation. One, be deliberate on how you handle the spikes in your life. You know, those periods when you find yourself married and or with children, and 24 hours is just not the same as when you were, you know, an individual. Second, as a manager, the importance of empowering your direct reports to diagnose their use of time and determine how and where to make improvements. And three, be mindful that it takes time to be proficient at managing time. It's not often a skill area that we're taught. So truly, be deliberate. Set a goal for yourself around how you will create a system for managing your time. I'd also like you to know of a couple of other successful time management strategies. Now, it's the Development Academy on their website where they reported that the most successful time management strategy is the Eisenhower Matrix. And the second most successful time management strategy is the Pomodoro Technique. So I'll be providing links to both of those strategies in the show notes for today's episode at TuesdaysWithCoachMo.com. And now for the segment, Coach Mo Knows, a tip, a coaching question, and a bit of inspiration. My tip this week is to take advantage of a, you know, kind of a self-guiding assessment that Francis provides at mytimedesign.com/assessment. Again, that's mytimedesign.com/assessment. And, you know, based on what he's identified as the 11 fundamentals required for effectively managing your time, you can take the assessment to examine and rate your current skills. Also, my tip this week is grab a copy of his book, Perfect Time-Based Management. It truly provides a wealth of information that will serve you well throughout your professional journey on how to effectively manage your time. Even when things are no longer working for you, his book provides a wealth of content on how to refine and improve your system. My coaching question this week is really starts with a challenge. My challenge for you is for the next 48 hours, track your hour-to-hour activities. At the end of those 48 hours, my question then becomes, what is your greatest area for improvement in your time management efforts? You know, stop responding to those in-the-moment requests and change how you plan your work. Modify your email habits, modify your social media habits, etc. And please do DM me over at Instagram or on LinkedIn with what you've discovered after doing your 48 hours of hour-to-hour tracking. And my inspiration this week comes from Thomas Edison, who said, "Time is really the only capital that any human being has and the only thing he can't afford to lose." Thanks so much for joining me today. Please be sure to subscribe so that each and every bi-weekly episode of the Tuesdays with Coach Mo podcast lands in your podcast listening library. And if you're enjoying the podcast on the Apple iTunes platform, please do leave a rating and review. People have so many choices today amongst podcasts, and to know of what is important and of value and brings you here will be of importance and value for others to learn. Thanks in advance for again sharing a review and a rating. And thanks for joining me. We'll see you in a couple weeks. That's a wrap for this episode of Tuesdays with Coach Mo. Showing up here tells me you're willing to invest in yourself and your career. Get additional resources at TuesdaysWithCoachMo.com. Please subscribe and leave a review. I'd love to get your feedback. Till next time, this is Coach Mo signing off.
Tuesdays with Coach Mo.